Okay. Over to you, Francis.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this third webinar on Light of the Soul. Today, we'll finish up the introduction and move into the first of four books on the sutras themselves. All of these four included in Alice Bailey's interpretation of Light of the Soul. As I said last time, she worked closely with the Master DK on this book. Okay, so we began our last session with the statement that because Raja Yoga, quote, centers one's consciousness in the soul, other forms of yoga are unnecessary, for the greater yoga automatically includes all the lesser in its results, though not in its practices. So Raja Yoga doesn't include all the practices of Hatha Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, but it does include the results. Okay, we then learned that the Buddha's life was the ultimate demonstration of the ageless wisdom as it had been developed in the East, but that since that time, quote, the tide of spiritual life has steadily flowed westward, and we may now look for a corresponding climax in the West, which will reach its zenith between 1965 and 2025. So this 60-year period, which had just passed, was ruled by the second ray. It was the high point of the Western second ray influx. As are the teachings of the Master Dual Kul, which is in contrast to the first three teachings of H.P. Blavatsky, who introduced the world to theosophy back in 1875. A.A.B. then introduces us to three books that she feels are essential for understanding soul and unfoldment. The Bhagavad Gita, which gives us a description of the soul, the New Testament, which provides an example of the soul in incarnation, and the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which lays out a method for achieving soul infusion. In the introduction to the sutras that follow, AAB asks, how does man, the victim of his desires and lower nature, become man the victor? Triumph over the world, the flesh, and the devil. It is brought about when the physical brain of the incarnated man becomes aware of the self, the soul, and this conscious awareness only becomes possible when the true self can, quote, reflect itself in the mind stuff. AAB then expands on this teaching, quote, man in incarnation as consciously to free himself from all objects of desire and stand as a unified whole, detached and liberated from all veils, from all forms in the three worlds. And then finally, when the state of conscious being as known by the spiritual man becomes also the condition of awareness of the man in physical incarnation, then the goal has been reached. So this is the goal of the spiritual path as described in the Yoga Sutras. It's not achieved by escaping the body to find the soul, but by bringing the full consciousness of the soul into the physical brain. And that pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. So next up, could we get a reader, please?
I'll read this. The date of the birth of Patanjali is unknown, and there is a good deal of controversy upon this matter. Most of the Occidental authorities ascribe date between the year 820 BC to 300 BC, but one or two of place him after Christ. The Hindu authorities themselves, however, who may be supposed to know something about the matter, ascribe a very much earlier date, even as far back as 10,000 BC. Patanjali was a compiler of teaching, which, up to the time of his advent, had been given orally for many centuries. He was the first to reduce the teaching to writing for the use of students, and hence he is regarded as the founder of the Raja Yoga school. The system, however, has been in use since the very beginning of the Aryan race. The Yoga Sutras are the basic teaching of the Trans-Himalayan school, to which many of the masters of the wisdom belong, and many students hold that the Essenes and other schools of mystical training and thought closely connected with the founder of Christianity and the early Christians are based upon the same system, and that their teachers were trained in the great Trans-Himalayan school.
Thank you, Bial. Okay, first, the date of the birth of Patanjali is unknown, and there is a good deal of controversy upon this matter. Most of the Occidental authorities ascribe a date between the years 820 BC to 300 BC, though one or two place him after Christ. The Hindu authorities themselves, however, who may be supposed to know something about the matter, ascribe a much earlier date, even as far back as 10,000 BC.
Pero le cae X que todo micrófono.
Somebody needs to get muted. Can you take care of that, Bill?
Ne, da, presto.
Okay, hang on a sec. Who we got here? I don't know where that's coming from. Are you there, Bia?
It's off
I'm
now.
here. I'm here, and I don't see who it was who was
Oh,
talking. I
Aunt
was trying to
Veronica.
look at the chats.
Aunt
Yeah.
Veronica. It could
They're
have been Aunt Veronica.
in their rooms. It was Maria.
Aunt Veronica.
Okay, you got it covered. Okay, good. That's the only thing that
All
mattered.
right. Okay.
Okay. All right. So on this business about Patanjali, right? So traditional Hinduism identifies Patanjali as an incarnation of the serpent god Ananta. According to one legend, Ananta overheard Lord Shiva imparting the secrets of yoga to his consort Parvati. Ordered by Shiva to share this wisdom with humanity, Ananta descended to earth, falling into the cupped hands, Anjali Mudra, of the devout woman Gonika. You could see her cupped hands here. Thus being named Pat Anjali, he who fell into the Anjali. I thought this was a cool story. The Theosophical esoteric view places Patanjali in the 5th to 6th century BC, making him a contemporary of Adi Shankara and living shortly after the time of Gautama Buddha. Modern Western academics put the date later, generally between 200 BC and 450 years CE. Next, Patanjali was a compiler of teaching, which up to the time of his advent had been given orally for many centuries. He was the first to reduce the teaching to writing for the use of students, and hence he is regarded as the founder of the Raja Yoga school. So Patanjali took the ancient oral rules of control, which had existed since the dawn of this root race, and crystallized them into a scientific manual, the sutras. This allowed the modern aspirant to use the mind to control the lower nature rather than relying on the physical austerities of the Lemurian age or the emotional devotion of the Atlantean age. And finally, the system, however, has been in use since the very beginning of the Aryan race. The Yoga Sutras are the basic teaching of the Trans-Himalayan school to which many of the masters of the wisdom belong. And many students hold that the Essenes and other schools of mystical training and thought closely connected with the founder of Christianity and the early Christians are based upon the same system, and that their teachings were trained in, teachers were trained in the great Trans-Himalayan school. Okay, so since the purpose of the Aryan race is to develop the mind, Raja Yoga, the science of mental control, is the divinely appointed method for its evolution. DK's book, Letters on Occult Meditation, gives a description of the tenets of the Trans-Himalayan school described in this section. He says, the unity of all life, A, unity of all life, B, the graded steps of development as recognized in man, and by the graded steps of its curriculum, which lead a man from one expansion of consciousness to another until he has reached that which we call perfection, and see the relationship between the microcosm and the macrocosm and its sevenfold application. So there you have a thumbnail sketch of the Trans-Himalayan school. Next up, the final paragraph of the introduction. Could we get a reader, please?
Okay. Ariane, I'm going to ask you to read that. But first, Frances, I'd like to read her chat. She puts, Patanjali was from the first century BC, a 4.3 degree initiate with a second ray soul, sixth ray personality, as the majority of Americans. And this is from Maitreya's Mission, Volume 1, page 386.
Okay. Okay, a reader, please.
We also have a hand. I can't see whose hand it is right now.
Let me see here.
Scott, go ahead with your hand, and then Ariane will have you read that.
Can you go back a page there, Francis?
Sure. Hang on.
Before that. There you go. The part of the statement that interests me in particular was where he says the basic teaching of the Trans-Himalayan school to which many of the masters of the wisdom belong. Say what?
As opposed to all of the masters of wisdom?
Yeah, what else is there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not really prepared to answer that, but I do have a memory that there is a Southern Indian school to which the Master Jupiter, as well as masters like, what was his name? His name eludes my aging brain. And that is a whole other school, a Southern Indian school, that in which and through which one could become a master of wisdom. That's the only other one that comes to mind, but you know, we have to figure that any of the regions who developed their own version of the ageless wisdom would have resulted in masters of wisdom. I imagine that the Tao in China created masters of wisdom, and you know, very possibly the Celtics group, the schools that were oriented around the Mediterranean, you know, the many mystery schools like the Greek mystery school of Mithras and others, of course, the Egyptians also created their own masters. Now, the question would be, for instance, is that great Egyptian school, quote unquote, you know, an extension of the Trans-Himalayan school? There's some writings that suggest that the origins of the Aryan root race, which came from Atlantis, settled in a number of areas, but that the wisdom was that was then transferred to Egypt and Babylonia and the Mediterranean region, especially Greece, originated in India. So, and that would bring you back to this idea of the two schools of India. So that's about what I, that's all I have on that.
I
It's,
think
it could be whether you're, consider it Transfamalian writ large, meaning all the ageless wisdom, or regionally,
we have to remember South America too, where Shambhala was previously located.
This is true, but not in the this Aryan root race. That would have been in a during previous root race. I think actually it was established during Lemurian times. I'm not sure, when the movement, at some point they moved to the White Island and the Gobi. And I think that is associated with the reestablishment for the Aryan root race, but can't be positive about that.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Okay, we're here, I believe, right?
Right.
All right. It should be stated here that the sutras have been dictated and paraphrased by the Tibetan Brother, and the commentary upon them has been written by myself and subjected to revision and comment by the Tibetan. It should be noted that the translation is not literal and is not an exact definition of each original Sanskrit term. It is an attempt to put into clear and understandable English the exact meaning, insofar as it is possible to do so through the medium of that non-elastic and unimaginative tongue. The student may find it of use in the study of these sutras to compare the rendition here given with the various other procurable translations. Alice Bailey, New York, May 1927.
Okay, so this is the only blue book, as I've said before, that AAB and DK actually co-wrote, with the other volumes wholly written by either DK or AAB. When I say wholly written by DK, of course, they came through AAB, but she didn't provide content, right? In this case, both actually provided content. And also, notice by the date here, this was the fourth book written, coming immediately after A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. I can't help but think that it's a kind of yin to the TCF's yang, right? There was that hard ray line represented by, of course, it's all under the second ray, but a lot of third ray in TCF, and this was a much more subjective, contemplative offering that came immediately after. Okay, any final questions on the introduction?
We have a couple of comments and we have a hand. So let me read the comment.
Okay.
Tia said Indian school when you were talking about that.
Right.
Arian said Confucius was a fifth degree initiate. And Arian says during the Atlantean period, masters worked openly with humans, acting as great priest kings until the Great War of Destruction.
Yeah. That unimaginably distant period of Atlantis, literally millions and millions of years ago. Not to be confused with historical masters. Okay. And a hand, did you say?
Yes, Carol, please go ahead.
We probably covered it last week, I mean last month, but I was had to miss it.
And what really grabbed my eye is that the second ray was 1965 to 2025. So I want to know then what ray are we going to be following now and for how long? Is that written anywhere? Because we've definitely shifted influence.
Yeah, it's a provocative question. I don't have the answer to it. It's certainly no accident that, the period ended at the year of the hierarchical conclave, which determines the relationship of the hierarchy to humanity for the following 100 years. Now, until 2125, at which time we will be fully into the Aquarian Age, which will start, according to a letter from DK to AAB, in 2117. So this is the final interim period that this conclave would be met for, as to the quality of Ray. I don't think there's going to be any diminishment of the second ray. I think the transference of the second ray energy from east to west has culminated last year, and now possibly there will be a more worldwide dispensation of that ray energy through the coming externalization of the hierarchy. But and then the only other information we have on this is the shift, the dramatic shift from this a sixth ray demonstration, which is very much waning right now in terms of that cycle, and is connected with the Piscean age, and the seventh ray, which is strongly connected with the Aquarian age. And of course, Aquarius is also one of the portals for the fifth ray. But I think these will be sub-ray outer demonstrations, almost like personality rays, to this fundamental second ray. Why? Because the Christ is also slated to be the avatar of this coming age, and he is a second ray avatar. He has the entire second aspect of our world under his purview, which is the hierarchy, right? So I don't think there will be a movement away from the second ray. It's just that that shift from east to west will have been completed, or
Thank you. I was wondering if it was Ray 5 because of the tech, but thanks.
well, I think, like I said, to put a fine point on it, that we're looking at a fifth and seventh subray expression of the second ray dispensation, not
Yes.
a shift away from the second ray altogether.
Thank you. Great news.
You bet. Great news, yeah. Okay. I'm just looking at some of that.
Yeah, I think you just covered the last one that we had from Ariane, but
Yeah, okay. All right, so time to, I see.
yeah, another hand.
Okay.
Let me see
Yeah,
who.
it's just a quick question. The students might find of use in the study of the sutras to compare the rendition given with the
Heliosol,
Leo's.
can you get closer to your mic? I'm having
Yeah. Okay. How about now? Is it better?
a little bit.
Okay,
There's
that's good.
an echo, and I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Basically, the rendition of the sutras and the other into the other languages, are they really procurable? Because are they translated? The question is like English is really like it's written here, it's non-elastic and unimaginative tongue. I agree with that. So I'd like to read it in Russian, for instance.
Okay, the problem with that is that the translation, English is the language that Alice Bailey spoke and received the transmission from Dhawal Khul. It wasn't also at that time put into a more illumined language form like Sanskrit, for instance, you know, which would have been extraordinary because we would have, you know, a much more illumined understanding of all this material. But the only, at least publicly known language that this material came into was English. All translations that have happened, and there's been at least a couple of dozen, have been from the English. Some of them I hear are not bad, others not so good. So, you know, what you have to do is talk to a, you know, a seasoned Alice Bailey student who has read some of these translations to determine whether that translation is worth it or not. But you'll always, if you can speak English, you'll be better off with the original, which is the English.
Okay, thank you. So English is original. Now that's clear. Although I was also thinking that in India, is there actually any literature of Patanjali sutras exist in some ancient language that could someone actually to elucidate as maybe really in an English originally?
Well, first of all,
couldn't be, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last.
Yeah, it couldn't be in English originally by Patanjali. And
that's right. No,
it's all honing on decay, right? It's decay and Alice Bailey. So that's probably what it is, consider the source of it for us.
Right. Well, you know, DK was Tibetan. He was able to, you know, being a master of wisdom, he was able to, I'm sure, read in the Sinzar, the original. Now, this is just a guess. I don't know. His process, he doesn't give his process in terms of, you know, how he perceived or came to perceive the sutras.
Yeah.
But I trust it implicitly. I think we have a truer translation, and, you know, the actual sutras are his, right? So when we read the sutras themselves, there are 51 in the first book, for instance, they are his words, right? And then Alice Bailey created this commentary on each sutra. And then the Tibetan came back and edited her commentary to make sure that it was in keeping with the original intention. Right. So I think it's very accurate, maybe the most accurate of the sutras that have been published. Right.
Thank you very much. This is very, very useful. Thank you.
Good, good. And that's a perfect closing to the introduction. Okay. So following the introduction, we have a bibliography of books on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which were used by AAB in the writing of Light of the Soul, and which I'm including here for those of you who might like to do a deeper dive into the material. You can access this page from the recording of this session on either YouTube or makara.us. And, or you can right now take a screenshot and have this material. Some of this is, a lot of this is theosophical. For instance, W.Q. Judge wrote a book. I remember taking a look at that. I think it's on my bookshelf. And some of them are pure Indian sourced, like Dvivedi, I should say, Yoga Sutras. Right. And then you have, here's Vivekananda, who was the primary student of Ramakrishna, wrote on Raja Yoga. So yeah, a very useful source, bibliography. Next we have a topical outline showing the titles and subsections of the four books. I think it's worth a read. It gives sort of the overall intention. So if we could get a reader here, please.
Susie, can you read that for us, please? Well, I don't see her unmuting. Okay, we got a hand up. Who's got their hand up? Mahelia Sol, are you volunteering to read?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I had my mute off. I'll try
all
again
right.
later.
I yield. It's okay, Susan. You can read. Thank you. I'll be back.
Go ahead.
Okay, topical outline. Book one, the problem of union. The higher and lower natures defined. B, the obstacles and their removal considered. C, a summation of the Raja Yoga system. Topic, the versatile psychic nature. Book two, the steps to union. A, the five hindrances and their removal. B, the eight means defined. Topic, the means of attainment. Book three, union achieved and its results. A, meditation and its stages. B, 23 results of meditation. Topic, the powers of the soul. Book four, illumination. A, consciousness and form. B, union or at-one-ment. Topic, isolated unity.
Okay, thank you. So we can see from this outline that the light of the soul is structured as a quote-unquote graded system of development that mirrors the evolutionary journey of the soul from bondage to liberation. And we'll be for quite a while here in book one, whose topic is to define that which must be eventually mastered, which is called here the versatile psychic nature. Okay.
Francis.
Oh, yeah.
Tia would like to make a comment about the Trans-Himalayan school and Indian school. You want to go ahead, Tia?
Go ahead, Tia.
Now, before we go further, I think we need to make a distinction. When Master DK is talking about, or when we're talking about the Trans-Himalayan school and the Indian school, we also are talking about the Lodge of Masters, because they belong to either each one of those approaches. A lot of these schools that you mentioned, Francis, we have to make a distinction because they may not have been started by masters. Many of these so-called esoteric traditions were started by aspirants. And so they actually come under the Trans-Himalayan school, but they are not at the same level, because in that being that the two different disciplines are actually lodges as well as schools to which the masters belong.
Okay. That's another discussion, as to whether, what comprises the lodges of masters are, you're right that just because a school calls their highest acolytes masters doesn't make them part of the hierarchy as masters of wisdom. But I do think there is a southern school that includes the Master Jupiter
and that's correct. That's why it's a lodge, because a master of wisdom belongs to it. When we talk about the Trans-Himalayan school, we're thinking about the Masters Moria and Masters Kuthumi, who were behind Theosophy. So,
okay.
And those are the distinctions. I mean, we're talking about, really, we're talking about fifth and sixth degree initiates and above that are starting traditions, not people who even are in the fourth degree.
Right.
Start these various traditions. They may have created a specialty or specialized in a certain interpretation of the Trans-Himalayan school. So they would fall underneath the Trans-Himalayan school, but I wouldn't say that you could equate them to the Indian and the Trans-Himalayan school.
I would agree, especially as the situation exists now. Now there may have been a time, but yeah, it's a fascinating discussion. All right, now we come to the sutras.
Sorry. Ariane says Vivekananda wrote on Advaita Vedanta, Jnana Yoga, or the union with all that is, which must be considered ultimately more lofty goal than union with the soul, Raja Yoga.
Okay, next up, the sutras of Book One entitled The Problem of Union. That's what we're moving into now. The blue panel on the left will now indicate this sutra that we are studying. You know, but it's like when I move on here, I isolate a sutra, and this is especially useful once we move past. Okay, it's too far than I. Farther than I thought. But when we move past the first page and you come to another page, you can always look over here on the left to see what sutra we're actually studying. Okay. That the text may be referencing, not have the sutra written on it, but we can see here in the left panel the sutra that we're actively engaged in. And when we do these seven, then we'll move on to the next seven. So, but what I'd like to do is there's 51 sutras in Book One. And in order to get a sense of how these sutras flow from one sutra to the next, I think it'd be useful to just go ahead and read the first seven. Okay, could we get a reader, please?
Scott, can you read those for us, please?
Yes. Yoga Sutras of Patanjali Book One, The Problem of Union. One, Aum. The following instruction concerneth the science of union. Two, this union or yoga is achieved through the subjugation of the psychic nature and the restraint of the citta or mind. Three, when this has been accomplished, the yogi knows himself as he is in reality. Four, up till now, the inner man has identified himself with his forms and with their active modifications. Five, the mind states are five and are subject to pleasure or pain. They are painful or not painful. Six, these modifications, activities, are correct knowledge, incorrect knowledge, fancy, passivity, sleep, and memory. Seven, the basis of correct knowledge is correct perception, correct deduction, and correct witness or accurate evidence.
Thank you, Scott. Okay. So now we'll start AAB's commentary on the first sutra. Can we get a reader for this, please?
Peggy, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Aum is the word of glory. It signifies the word made flesh and the manifestation upon the plane of matter of the second aspect of divinity. This blazing forth of the sons of righteousness before the world is achieved by following the rules herein contained. When all the sons of men have demonstrated that they are also sons of God, the cosmic Son of God will likewise shine forth with increased intensity of glory. The great initiate, Paul, had a vision of this when he said that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain, waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God.
Thank you, Peggy. Okay, first, the following instruction concerneth the science of union. Aum is the word of glory. It signifies the word made flesh and the manifestation upon the plane of matter of the second aspect of divinity. This blazing forth of the sons of righteousness before the world is achieved by following the rules herein contained. So it's like a grand introductory statement. In this context, glory refers to the radiance or brilliance of the soul when it fully infuses the personality. The AUM is the sacred word given to our solar logos by the one about whom naught may be said in order to manifest our solar system. Could we get a reader for this passage? It talks a little more about the AUM.
Gerald, can you read that for us, please?
It must be remembered that the sound Aum is man's endeavor to reproduce on an infinitesimally small scale the cosmic triple sound whereby creation was made possible. The words of power, or the permutations of the Aum, exist in every possible tone, subtone, and quarter tone, and upon these shades of sound, the work of creation and its subsistence is built up. A multiplicity of sound exists within each greater sound and affects different groups.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, so AUM signifying the quote unquote manifestation upon the plane of matter of the second aspect of divinity means that the soul, just as does the logos, uses the AUM to send an aspect of itself into incarnation. So both cosmically and systemically, sounding the Aum initiates an involutional force used to manifest spirit and matter. Thus it is literally the word made flesh. For disciples on the evolutionary return journey, the OM becomes the sacred word. Sons of righteousness are human beings who have successfully aligned their lower nature with the soul. They are no longer the hidden sons of men, but now revealed sons of God. Blazing forth is an occult term referencing the light in the head that becomes clairvoyantly visible when the soul takes control of the body, which we're here told can be achieved by following the quote rules herein contained. Any thoughts or questions? Okay, next up. When all the sons of men have demonstrated that they are also sons of God, the cosmic Son of God will likewise shine forth with increased intensity of glory. The great initiate Paul had a vision of this when he said that, quote, the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain, waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God. Romans 8. So the theme here is that the attainment of the individual yogi is not a private event, but a contribution to the evolution of the cosmic Christ himself and the planet as a whole. When individual human beings demonstrate that they are sons of God by bringing the soul into full expression through the personality on the physical plane, they release light, thus contributing to the radiance of the whole, to the planet, to the evolving cosmic Christ. The verses citing Paul's vision are Romans 8:22, quote, For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in the pain together until now. And Romans 8:19, for the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. Groaneth refers to the evolutionary labor pains of the planetary life. Travaileth in pain comes from the conflict between spirit and matter as that life struggles to emerge from the form. The whole creation waiting implies that the subhuman kingdoms cannot progress beyond a certain point without the help of humanity. They are, quote unquote, waiting for man to step into his power as a son of God. The manifestation refers to the externalization of the hierarchy. When human beings manifest as souls, they become the saviors or mediators who can transmit spiritual energy to the lower kingdoms, thus relieving the quote unquote groan of creation. Okay, any thoughts? Saw a hand. Tia.
Yeah, go ahead.
You could say also this paragraph could be talking about the three periodic vehicles and their emergence. And the different energies that happen as they come together and try to reach a state of synthesis. Because it's only when we do that that we truly become a son of God. So, you know, sons of God, they could have to demonstrate it, the cosmic son of God. In that sense, talking about moving from personality to soul, which is a solar man, and to the cosmic son of God, which is the monad, and the pain that comes when we in physical incarnation are trying to inform the physical vehicle with these three energies that are constantly at many times in conflict with one another.
Yeah, apparent conflict because of our resistance to the process.
Right.
Yeah, well,
and that causes the whole creation groaneth because it takes so long for this to happen. It's the waiting. But we experience the travails of pain because it's only through suffering in this particular paradigm that the fusion can occur on Earth.
Yeah, and that's highlighted in this series of cycles. We're in this series of fours right now, you know, fourth round, fourth globe, fourth chain, in a fourth order solar system, and four, of course, very much relates to the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. The conflict has to be undergone before the harmony is achieved, and that's exactly in this fourth kingdom what we're experiencing. The light on the horizon comes from the fact that we're in the fifth root race, which is just one step past the absolute dead center in most concrete cycle of the planetary scheme. So yeah, a lot of groaning, a lot of travailing happens during this cycle. Okay, anybody else? It's, you know, these dialogues always more interesting than me just droning on. So I appreciate your participation. Okay, next up, reader, please.
Ariane, can you read that? Well, wait a minute, I moved you already. I'm sorry. Maria Michaelis, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Raja Yoga, or the union, a science of union, gives the rules and the means whereby. One, conscious contact can be made with the soul, the second aspect, the Christ within. Two, knowledge of the self can be achieved and its control over the not self maintained. Three, the power of the ego or soul can be felt in the daily life and soul powers manifested. Four, the lower psychic nature can be subdued and the higher psychic faculties demonstrated. Five, The brain can be brought into rapport with the soul and its messages received. 6. The light in the head can be increased so that a man becomes a living flame. 7. The path can be found and man himself become that path.
Thank you, Maria. Okay, first, Raja Yoga, or the science of union, gives the rules and the means whereby, 1, conscious contact can be made with the soul, the second aspect, the Christ within. So conscious contact is contact that is registered by the physical brain, hence the term the science of union. Why is there such an emphasis on the ideal that Raja Yoga is a science? Because it follows a sequence analogous to the scientific method, which starts with a theory or belief, in this instance, the existence of the soul, leading to a series of experiments, which in Raja Yoga are certain disciplines and meditations, resulting in proof of the initial theory, which is the realization of the soul's existence through conscious contact. Okay. Second, knowledge of the self can be achieved and its control over the not self maintained. So through continued soul contact, a gradually expanded awareness of the nature of the soul is created, which, when incorporated into the disciple's daily life, leads to personality control. This is what is meant by the dictum, know thyself. Okay? 3, the power of the ego or soul can be felt in the daily life and soul powers manifested. The disciple's soul connection moves from knowing the self to wielding the power of the self in daily life. At this point, the ego steps in as the director, and its potencies, which work through the higher sensory faculties, now direct the disciple's outer life. Then you literally have a soul in the incarnation. 4. The lower psychic nature can be subdued and the higher psychic faculties demonstrated. So lower psychism includes ordinary clairvoyance, clairaudience, and mediumship, which if developed can become obstacles to spiritual realization. Higher psychism, called siddhis, are the powers of the soul. Subduing lower psychism comes through restraint of the citta or mind stuff, and by withdrawing one's attention from lower sense impressions. 5, the brain can be brought en rapport with the soul and its messages received. You see how these are progressive? Through yoga, the brain gradually becomes a receiver of truth impressions from the soul. To receive correctly, it must become completely quiescent and trained to vibrate in unison with the higher frequencies of the soul. 6, the light in the head can be increased so that a man becomes a living flame. Okay, so the light in the head's very specific. It's a literal biophysical phenomenon which radiates from the pineal gland. It is produced by the fusion of the light inherent in the physical etheric substance of the head and the light of the soul pouring into the brain. To the eye of the seer, it appears as a radiant circle of pure white light, you know, what we call an aura or an aureole surrounding the head of the high initiate. And finally, 7, the path can be found and man himself becomes that path. This represents the ultimate synthesis of the yogic process that results from the previous six steps. Here, the disciple moves from the duality of a traveler seeking a destination to the realization that the traveler, the road, and the destination are in fact all one. It is the completion of the Antahkarana and identification with the circulating life energy of the planetary logos. Okay, so these are all steps that, quote, Raja Yoga, or the science of union, gives the rules and the means whereby all these steps can be achieved. Okay. Next up, can we get a reader, please?
Leah, can you read that for us, please?
The following triplicities may be found of value to the student, especially if he remembers that it is the central column which contains the term applicable to the soul or second aspect. The union to be achieved is that of the third and second aspects. This is consummated at the third initiation in Christian terminology. Transfiguration. A later synthesis is then effected between the united third and second aspects and the first. The first aspect, spirit, father, monad, divine self, life, energy, the presence. Second aspect, soul, son, Christ, ego, higher self, consciousness, force, the angel of the presence. Third aspect, body, Holy Ghost, personality, lower self, form, matter, the human being.
Thank you, Tia. Okay, first, the following triplicities may be found of value to the student, especially if he remembers that it is the central column which contains the terms applicable to the soul or second aspect. The central column, which represents the second aspect of deity, includes the soul, the son or Christ, the ego, the higher self, consciousness, force, and the angel of the presence. This column represents the mediating principle between the third and first aspects. It symbolizes the quality of deity, the result of the union of life and form. The term force, sixth on the list, is here used to suggest that the soul, which draws its energy from the spirit, is the manipulator of that force which animates matter. The angel of the presence is the guardian that stands between the lower man and the true presence, which the disciple cannot know until first meeting the angel. Next, the union to be achieved is that of the third and second aspects. This is consummated at the third initiation, in Christian terminology, the transfiguration. So here are the second and third aspects, which are fused at the third initiation, finally and completely, even though all through aspiration, discipleship, and the first three initiations, it's these two that one is primarily working with. Then at the third initiation, one actually begins to include the first aspect. Could we get a reader, please?
Sure, but I want to talk about a couple of comments that we've had in here. Marianne says, what's the relationship of the Holy Ghost and the feminine aspect, which seems excluded from the triplicate, but the reference to matter? And then Maria asks, what does Holy Ghost mean here? And Shriyanta Shanti says mother, and Maria asks, does matter mean mother? So those were all kind of related.
Matter, starting from the last, matter means mother. Mater is literally mother in some languages. But you have to understand that the aspect of matter includes active intelligence. So it's the feminine force of the form aspect, right, itself, which, when quote unquote, when the life aspect is embedded within the form, then instantly the second aspect arises, you could say spontaneously arises. And in truth, this is the only thing that actually exists, is this second aspect, because you don't, there is no pure form outside of consciousness. Everything has some level of consciousness because the first aspect has penetrated all form. There is no form without this without it enclosing or carrying the first aspect. This occurs, this is how manifestation comes into being, is this interpenetration. The vesica pisces, in Italian it's called the mandorla, which you where you have these two circles that are that cross over, and there's a center section. It looks kind of like an ellipse. That represents the reality that's being described here. One circle is pure spirit. The other circle is pure matter, called Mula Prakriti, or the shining sea of substance. And it's there that you get to this idea of the holy ghost. The ghost is a form-based concept, right? And it's of course sacred because it's the reflection in the form world of spirit, and that is the matter aspect. When they combine, which everything in existence has combined, you have this second aspect. Okay, does that answer all the questions? There was a number of aspects to that question, so I think I might have picked them all up.
And there are some follow-ons too. Tia says, following the reasoning, I would think that the Holy Ghost here means the purified personality. It is a ghost because it is not soul infused. And then Arion says, Purusha, spirit, and Prakriti, matter, are actually two poles of the same. Matter is a denser expression. Yet the fact that the feminine is excluded here has dire consequences for us women and the earth itself.
Okay, to address your first point, yeah, matter itself is sequential. You know, you have, for instance, molecular substance in each of the subplanes, and then you have atomic substance, which is the purified essence of whatever plane is being demonstrated. This is true of each of the subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. So, for instance, the first subplane of the physical plane within the cosmic physical plane is made up of pure atomic substance, and an atom of that substance actually carries the permanent atom. Let me rephrase that. That one of the atoms of this atomic substance is used by the soul to record the gains made on the physical plane by the progressive series of incarnations, just at physical levels. That's the physical permanent atom. That atom is made of atomic substance and holds as a recording the gains, vibrational gains made in physical on in terms of the physicality of the progression of incarnations. The same is true on astral levels. You have an astral permanent atom also made of an atomic atom, astral atom, that one of these is also used by the soul to encode the quality, the vibration of the astral nature of this progressing human beings. Same is true, but at a very, very much higher level of the monastic permanent atom. In between there, you have the mental unit, which is actually molecular in structure. So the entire cosmic physical plane has the highest subplane as the Udi plane, which is made up of what DK calls the sea of fire. Now, you were talking about the lack of feminine. All this is feminine. The entire third aspect is feminine in its philosophical definition. So the Udi plane of the cosmic physical plane, which is the sea of fire, is in fact the purest form, the Mula Prakriti, the feminine aspect of the whole process of manifestation, right? It's the matter from which all the forms, all the bodies are drawn from, through all the seven subplanes. Okay. Okay, now could we get a reader?
Yeah, we have a lot of comments, and then we have a hand. So,
hey, with the comments.
All right. Ariane says the age of Aquarius will be the age of the Great Mother, the nurturing feminine, and human survival depends on this. Suzanne says initiations recording atomic energy gained increments of 25% each.
Yeah.
And then,
let's not do them all at once, okay? Because So, as to Ariane's comment, mother nurture is a function of spirit and matter in conscious relationship. That's what nurture is. It's bringing forth the higher aspects to nurture that which is budding and growing, whether that's a literal physical child, an organization, or a personality in becoming the soul, right? It's not matter in and of itself, because matter in and of itself doesn't exist. Matter is always a demonstration of the first aspect of spirit in form, okay? And that demonstration comes through consciousness. Okay, and let's see, going on to the percentages, this is a, you know, for you theosophical nerds, this is when you pay attention. At the first initiation, 25% of your entire, the makeup of your three sheaths, 25% will become atomic substance. That, I think, actually is bestowed at initiation. But remember, you take initiation before you, you initiate yourself before you take initiation. So you rise to that level, and then there is, through ceremony, a bestowal at initiation. When all that is said and done, at the first initiation, your three sheaths are composed of 25% atomic substance. At the second initiation, 50% atomic substance. At the third, 75%. And we can assume that at the fourth, the causal body is shattered because one has achieved a full measure of purity of form, which would be 100% atomic substance. One is then released from the lower quaternary. So go on with your comments. That's those two. BL?
That was it. So Tia, now okay. Go ahead, please.
I think we have to be careful when we talk about the ancient wisdom in these masculine and feminine dichotomies, that we're actually talking about consciousness and not the embodied physical form. because I think sometimes we conflate these two and they're different because we all have masculine and feminine aspects within ourselves.
Totally.
How that ex we choose through consciousness how we externalize that in the second aspect by utilizing and involving the second aspect. And then when Master DK talks about man, he's not talking about men as we have
Right.
incorrectly used that term. He's referring archetypally to the monastic principle. So I think we need to just make sure that we're using correct terms and understanding how we're using it in this philosophy, as opposed to how we think of it in modern language or colloquialisms. It's not the same.
I agree 100%. And it's an interesting topic. I once in a while address it in my webinars because it's important to realize that the way English was used between 1925 and in the mid 40s, there was no conflict in using the term man to represent the gender. A gender neutral English in English, man represents a gender neutral, but that's not how we use it anymore. So it can be very misleading, especially like in the Great Invocation, where the term man is used over and over again. But it's we're all composed of male and female aspects, and which is another way of saying we're all spirit in form, right? Philosophically, the metaphor, and I underscore that metaphor, is that spirit has the masculine connotation and form has the feminine. So we are all in that system, the sun, okay, of the two, men and women alike. Right. Now the question of women's equality and women's rights is directly connected to the process of becoming. I think it is one of the aspects of the reestablishment of the plan on Earth, right? As is described in the Great Invocation, that's one of the great levels of becoming that will be achieved in the Aquarian Age, provided all goes according to plan, right? Will be this sense of equality, so that the weightedness of the issue will fall away, just in the fact of that achieved equality, right? Not the differences will fall away, the inherent differences, but the conflict that has very rightly been with us, throughout this root race will finally be the equality will be achieved. Okay, that brought probably a bunch of comments. I don't want this to turn into to just get stuck on this, but I don't mind a few more comments.
Okay. He has got her hand raised again, but Maria just said the feminine has been ghosted for centuries, but the change is happening. So go ahead, Tia.
Well, I think when you go back and you look at the Hellenistic period and you look at periods prior to this, and thinking about continuity of consciousness, when you think about Master DK had access to all his previous lives. The feminine aspect was really considered the hidden aspect, the receiving aspect. Astrologically speaking, I know you know, BL, it's what lies below the equator. And then the masculine aspect is the outward directed, the external directed aspect of being. So it had nothing to do with gender types. This is something that was added later and put on top of that. And so, when you fall into this rise of feminine or rise of masculine, you're actually entering into a conflict that's a false dichotomy that was never meant to exist. What we're all evolving to is the divine hermaphrodite, and we have to reach that in consciousness before we reach that in form. So we have to be careful with all of this because we don't need to be fighting against each other and being separative, which we all know what that is, and really understand that there's a unity here. And yes, as a woman and as a woman of color, I'm very aware of what suppression is, but doesn't mean that I have to take it up. And we don't have to here, I don't think.
It's just recognizing the parameters of the philosophical understanding of male, female, or masculine, feminine, and the social parameters of it. Yes, they interrelate, but don't think that when you're reading DK that he's, unless he specifically says men and women, and he does once in a while, he's talking about these qualities or aspects of form and spirit, of which we all partake. Okay, anyone else? Are we
Yeah,
getting?
we have a couple of more comments. Susie says we have all been, will be, and he and she at some point in incarnation. So overdone concern in this arena, perhaps. And then Arion says, what about the genders associated with the different nations?
Of the different nations.
Nations.
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. Often has to do with the ray types, the ray associations with those nations, because you have the odd numbered rays are considered masculine, and the even numbered rays feminine. Again, understanding the true connotations of those two terms, right? And so you can find it, you can find some explanation just in the ray types. But beyond that, I really can't answer. I couldn't tell you why such and such a country is considered feminine and another one masculine.
Francis,
Yeah.
I just want to say that not only the rays, but the astrological signs, they also have,
Right.
they're
Thank you,
split
Bia.
up into the, so it's, and when DK talks in The Destiny of the Nations, he not only talks about the rays, but he talks about the astrological signs. So
Yeah.
it's just part of what is.
Right. It's equally important consideration would be the astrology of the nations, right? Rays and astrology of the nations.
But it's important to understand it's how we interpret it. Nothing is an absolute in and of itself. We are in incarnation, so we with our own consciousness are putting a paradigm upon these archetypal energies and interpreting them in our own ways.
Right.
Unless so we have to be conscious and aware of that. And the question is, are we interpreting it in terms of unity, or are we interpreting it in terms of separation?
Exactly. Yes. Well said. Yeah, those individually created paradigms really need to be examined, to see that they are in line with the tenets of theosophy or philosophy, whatever particular school you follow, Okay, next. Anybody else?
Joe.
Go ahead, Joe.
I've fought this battle all my life, and right now I'm very appreciative of all the comments. But I also want to point out that basically I left the Roman Catholic Church more than 50 years ago for this very reason. And I think we can say, I'm not sure, that every existing religious institution in the globe, and there are numerous ones of them, I don't believe any of them have yet acknowledged the equality, suggesting to me that we are aiming, we as a humanity are aiming toward a different religion, in part because the old institutions no longer completely satisfy.
Yes, I would agree with you completely and make it real clear that it's not in the ageless wisdom that substands these spiritual belief systems, but in the degradation of, you know, each of them to some degree, where that very human prejudice is then inserted, you know, that it never exists in the true underlying religion, which we call the ageless wisdom, right? Of which every single religion has some, is drawing to some extent their source as their source. Okay, we're going to be here, I see. This is going to be this session. All right, anyone else? The next thing?
Tri Yantra Shanti says, language and culture are inseparable constructs. DK said somewhere in externalization of the hierarchy that our language will change around 70s plus with the new spiritual teachers. And she says she's paraphrasing that.
What do you mean around 70s? What does that mean?
Priyantra Shanti, you want to answer Francis's question?
Seven,
1970s onward.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
All and right. Then Tia says language and culture are third aspects. Consciousness is the second aspect.
Lord of civilization, right? Lord of civilization, third aspect. It's the feminine aspect of the form that culture takes, that civilizations take, right? All righty. Good discussion. I appreciate it. So did we ever read this? I can't remember.
No, I don't think that we did.
We got that. Yeah. Can we get a reader, please?
Angela, can you read that for us, please?
So it just before you do, Angela, so this is about the fact that the second and third aspects are fused at the third initiation. So go ahead.
Angela, please go ahead. Okay, I don't see her unmuting. All right.
Angela, she sometimes has trouble unmuting. Angela, can you unmute?
All right, Heliosol has her hand up. Are you going to read for us again, please, Irina?
Oh, I haven't read, so I will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, should I?
Okay,
I don't mind if she. I can just yield it. That's okay.
Who do you want? Yeah, I'm unmuted now.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Angela.
We'll go with Angela. Go ahead.
Okay. The secret of the third initiation is the demonstration of complete freedom from the claims and demands of the personality. It does not involve the achievement of a completely perfect expression of the spiritual life, but it does indicate that the service of the initiate and his life demonstration, regarded in a broad and general way from the angle of the life tendency and of entire dedication to humanity, remains untouched by the limitations, still existence of the personal lower self.
Okay, so I included this quote just to give a sense of what is achieved when these two are blended. And one becomes a soul infused personality. It doesn't mean the final synthesis with the spirit aspect, but it does indicate, quote unquote, the service of the initiate and his life demonstrated. Okay. Next, a later synthesis is then effected between the united third and second aspects and the first. So starting at the level of the transfigured or soul-infused personality that we just read about, the adept moves on to a synthesis of the higher evolution, eventually merging the perfected soul personality with the one's life. And that's when these two aspects, already blended, are infused by this first aspect. Okay, thoughts, questions? All right, can we get a reader, please?
Okay, yeah. Ariane says the masters are feminists, and she says, I realize feminism is a word beneath them, but I have no other means to say love joins all things, and God is love.
I totally agree that masters would naturally be feminist. They would also be masculinists if that is what was needed at this time, but it's not, right? It's what's needed to balance and to allow for the a further synthesis is feminism, is the rise of feminism so that there's an equality, demonstrated equality. Okay, next up, a reader, please.
Arena.
Sure. Book one. Oh, no. Seventh page. Okay.
Middle column, please. Where it starts, a clear distinction.
Yes, thank you. A clear distinction should be made between the Christ principle, as indicated above, which is a high spiritual aspect to which each member of humanity must attain, and the same term applied to a personage of exalted rank representing that principle, whether in historical reference to the man of Nazareth or otherwise. Two. This union or yoga is achieved through the subjugation of the psychic nature and the restraint of the citta or mind. The follower after union has two things to do. First, to gain control of the versatile psychic nature. Second, to prevent the mind from assuming the many forms it is so easily does. These are frequently called modifications of the thinking principle.
Thank you, Irene. Okay, looks like we're going to finish the first sutra, which is a good stopping point. So first up, we have a clear distinction should be made between the Christ principle, as indicated above, which is a high spiritual aspect to which each member of humanity must attain, and the same term applied to a personage of exalted rank representing that principle, whether in the historical reference to the man of Nazareth or otherwise. So the Christ principle is the soul or consciousness aspect latent in every human heart, whereas the Christ is the name of the office, also called Maitreya, of the world teacher who perfectly embodies that principle. He's a sixth initiate preparing to take the seventh and will be the avatar of the coming age. Whereas the soul-infused personality who embodies the Christ principle is a third initiate, the Christ himself is on the verge of taking the seventh initiation. And That's where we're going to stop because it's a natural place to stop. Here we come to the second sutra, and we'll pick that up next time. So do you have announcements for times, or is there any more chats that need to be looked at?
There's a couple of more chats if you want to look at them while I give the times, and then you can
that sounds
make
great.
your comments. Okay. All right. So upcoming is TCF on the 10th at 7 p.m. That's Treatise on Cosmic Fire. At 7 p.m. on this coming Friday. Wait. Then this
TCF, we just did TCF on Friday.
Yes, it's not this coming Friday. It's the 10th, whatever Friday that is.
Yeah, it'd be.
No, it's the 13th.
It's
okay.
Now you're getting there.
All right, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong calendar.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the 13th, sorry.
Second Friday.
Okay. The next secret doctrine is the 15th. The second Sunday, 2 weeks from now, at 7 p.m.
Third Sunday.
Okay, that. My mind, I'm losing it. The next Light of the Soul will be 5 April, which will be Easter Sunday, and it's going to be late because of the Easter Sunday programs. So it will start at 9 p.m. GMT. Okay?
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so... yeah, Tia has some interesting comments. She says, feminine and masculine, if you must refer to such dichotomies. Oh, Maria asked the question, well then, which is the best term to use, right? And what terms do you feel would be most appropriate for use? And Tia responds, feminism is a complex term, and wait a minute, that's not correct. It's below it. Feminism, masculine, if you must refer to such dichotomies, but no, but not feminism or feminist, feminine or masculine, as opposed to feminism or feminist, which are very specifically cultural phenomenons, right? Social phenomenons, whereas feminine and masculine are universal concepts. So, yeah, and then Tia also says, feminism is a complex term in modern history, especially in terms of its identity creation in relation to other marginalized groups, right? It is not a bucket term that addresses the issues of all women. That is why it is safer to stay away from these terms in this type of study.
Okay, I think everything else is just a thank you very much, Francis.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Okay, thank you all. Much love. We'll see you next time. And it sounds like that's going to be on the 13th, Sunday the 13th. However, there will be a pre-full moon tomorrow through the Moria Federation. You can sign up or just appear. Click on the link in moriafederation.com. So hope to see you there. Have a good one.
Okay, Francis, I'm rubbing off on you. You said Sunday the 13th, and it's Friday the 13th.
Uh-oh.
You just didn't want to say that. You didn't want to say Friday the 13th.
That's what it was.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.